Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of the Locked On Cavaliers podcast. As always, I'm Chris Manning, your host from ForTheSword.com and The Step Back. Today, it's Tuesday, September 12th. Today's show is recapping Chetty Osman's play in EuroBasket 2017. He wrapped up his stint with Turkey over the weekend, and joining me today is Trevor Magnotti from Fear the Sword and The Step Back, and hope you guys and enjoy what Trevor and I talked about in terms of Chetty. Tomorrow, Andy Liu from the Light Years podcast, and WarriorsWorld.com will be the guest talking about how the Cavs and the Warriors now match up considering the Cavs' offseason change and really what's at stake for both teams. Also want to let you know that today's podcast is brought to you by the good folks at SeatGeek. If you don't already know, SeatGeek is the best way for you to buy and sell tickets right on your phone. You can get anything, Indians tickets, Cavs tickets, Browns tickets, concert tickets on SeatGeek. All it takes is two taps, you can see the view from your seat, you're going to get the best deals on tickets, and they're all great. If it's a green, it's a good deal. If it's red, it's a bad deal. And if it's yellow, it's kind of an okay deal. But you're going to know exactly just by looking at the map of tickets available if you're getting a deal that is fair or if you're overpaying, and you're not going to get cheated with any hidden fees or anything where you're going to get ripped off. I love SeatGeek. I just used it to get Indians tickets on Friday, and that's a hot ticket right now. If you want an Indians ticket in Cleveland, it's really hard to get good tickets at a fair price, but I did that on SeatGeek, and I got to go see the Indians pick up another win on their run towards an MLB record streak. So you can do that as well. You can go see them maybe this week as they play the Tigers and they get closer to the playoffs. But go download SeatGeek today. Use the promo code LOMBA. That's LOMBA. Save $20 on your first purchase and use that promo code to save $20. And you see, go see something you want to see, like an Indians game, or save it for a Cavs ticket when those come around in a couple weeks here. But here's today's podcast with Trevor Magnotti talking about Chetty Osman. Hope you guys enjoy.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Trevor, of course, we're back here to talk about Chetty Osman and EuroBasket. Chetty played five games with Turkey, who advanced past the elimination group stage. They played Spain, lost there on Sunday. Ended up having I think overall for the five games, in my mind he was Turkey's best player. If you didn't see his averages, 16 points for him, two steals a game, a little under one block, 3 point assist, five boards, got to the line a very impressive 6.3 times a game, shot over 80% for the line. Shot six threes a game, made those at a 35% clip, and remember that is at a slightly closer three-point line. Overall, shot 38.2% from the field. Trevor, just broadly speaking here, what did you make of how Chetty played at EuroBasket?
I think he was about where I expected him to be. Before EuroBasket started, we talked about kind of how he was going to play a little bit out of position for what he would normally play in the NBA on this Turkey team. That ended up being the case. He ended up playing primarily three and a lot of four when he's probably a two who's going to play some three at the NBA level. But he played pretty well in spite of that. You know, he was asked to be Turkey's secondary creator a lot of the time. And, you know, he didn't look very comfortable doing that, but the catch and shoot opportunities were good. He was very active on the defensive end of the ball. Made a lot of plays on defense. Didn't really get taken advantage of too much, even when he was battling against stronger players. Basically, he was impactful in the game, even when his shot wasn't falling. That third game of the tournament that they had against Serbia, he was pretty bad offensively for most of the game. But he ended up coming out and ending up ended up having a pretty good line in that game because it was tight late and he was able to still make an impact. He ended up having a bunch of steals, was able to get to the line a bunch, and then hit a couple of really clutch threes to really keep that game close. So, you know, I think he did everything that I expected him to. There wasn't really anything that jumped out at me that was missing out of what I'd seen from him in EuroLeague. He kind of did everything that I expected. The one thing that I will say he kind of impressed me with, and I know that you caught this too, the free throw attempts were awesome. Like, he had never gotten to the line at that rate that I had really seen. And he was very impressive at drawing contact, absorbing contact inside the paint, and finishing while still drawing fouls. So I really thought that was impressive. That's going to be a really big thing for him if he can finish through contact, because he's going to be used as a cutter a lot at the NBA level. And I think that that's an area that he can continue to grow in.
So that's a very, very good point. Then let's start there with that. I think him getting to the line was impressive in the sense that he did it in different games at different levels. The opener, he got to the line 15 times, if I'm not mistaken. And other games, not quite as much, obviously. It's going to be hard to replicate 15 free throw attempts. But where you could see him struggling a little bit with that is that he's not strong. He just doesn't look strong enough yet to finish through a lot of contact. And I think that's something he's going to have to improve on. On a broader kind of offshoot of that, I can see a framework for him where, depending on how much stronger he can get over the next couple of years, I don't think it's out of the question that he could defend two threes and fours. Like, I think he maybe will always struggle with some of the really bulkier fours that are maybe not as common in the NBA now because of where the game is going. And because he's just so long and kind of lanky and he just kind of has a skinnier natural build. But you can see the framework of a guy who, like, is comfortable defending in the paint. And I think, like, generally, a lot of the things with him, and a lot of this is the free throws, it just looked like a guy who is really young, kind of figuring stuff out on the fly a little bit, but he's just not strong enough to kind of maximize those moments yet, even though he has these really nice moments where he's attacking on the off the dribble, he's figuring stuff out, and he's, like, has the poise to kind of make a lot of this work.
Yeah, I think that the other part of that too, and when I jumped on our friends Justin Rowan and Carter Rodriguez's pod last week, we all talked about this. He's still growing into his body a little bit, and he is not the most coordinated fellow at this point.
No, not at all. People talking about like him being a 6'8" deli is some coded shit, but. You know, I think, like, the comparison that they're, in the sense that he's not the most coordinated dribbler or athlete right now, is pretty fair. I mean, I think even you saw him, I don't remember exactly what game it is, but there's a clip of him just falling down because he's just kind of off balance a little bit sometimes.
Yeah, he went in to celebrate one of his late threes that he hit against Serbia and ended up, like, missing the chest body bump and ended up collapsing, so... I think that's another aspect of it that's going to get a little bit better. I think he might always be kind of a little bit uncoordinated, but kind of in that Kristaps Porzingis way where it's like he's just too long for his frame a little bit, and he's a little bit all appendages, and those guys always look a little bit unnatural. So I think that's an area that he needs to improve in as well. He needs to get better or he needs to get kind of better on his feet, better moving laterally, and work on that coordination to become a lot better. But I think you're right. I think that he's going to be able to defend fours at the NBA level eventually, and I think that's going to unlock a lot of his potential use for a good NBA team. If he can act in kind of that Andre Roberson or Chris Middleton role where he's, you know, sliding up and defending a small ball four, so that they can hide like an all offense guy like the Bucks do with like when they pair Middleton and Beasley together. I think that's a pretty ideal situation, especially on this Cavs team that's, you know, as LeBron ages, he can help take pressure off of him in that kind of classic Shane Battier role.
which Jay Crowder will fill this year, so, and Richard Jefferson can kind of do as well, and he can kind of get some mentoring in that sense. One more thing on the strength, I want to point out that I think one of the things you saw him struggle with both his uncoordinated aspects of his game and his strength issues, is that he didn't really shoot all that well in between, inside the paint. So if you just look at how his shots were split, normally players are going to shoot a little bit better inside the paint, just because they're closer to the rim and you're getting just closer looks. You know, made 2.2 threes a game out of his 4.3 made field goals. That's not a great split. And I, you know, it's not like super concerning for me in terms of him, you know, getting minutes as a rookie or anything like that, because I'd expect some of the struggle, but it's worth noting that he does kind of struggle with some of the stuff inside. Some of that I think will like be lesser when he's playing with better talent. Like I don't mean to denigrate Turkey's talent level, but if he's cutting off LeBron James passes and Kevin Love passes and these other things, like, he's just going to get easier looks than him having to sort of ISO his way to the basket in a way he did for Turkey. So I think that's sort of worth noting. Trevor, for me, and this is going to be something that I don't always like doing, and I do like to actually talk about some of the tangible skills, and I think if you go look at the streamable cuts I made and stuff, you can see a lot of the physical showcase of him. The thing that blew me away the most was just how hard he plays. Just how much, even though he was leading the team in minutes almost every game, got bopped in the mouth by Wancho, was kind of having to do a little bit of everything. This guy, the whole time Turkey was in this tournament, he's running around in defense, he's calling for the ball in offense, he's wanting to do stuff, and he didn't shy away from these very pressure-packed moments. That isn't always, you know, a future indicator of how good a guy is going to be. You know, the cojones factor is not the ultimate test of a guy, but that's really, really impressive for a guy who, if he's going to play, is going to kind of have a lot of scrutiny on him as a rookie because of who he's playing with.
Yeah, I want to just go back real quick and mention something on the finishing thing. He didn't shoot well very much inside the paint. But that's kind of what you were talking about, is kind of a Euro basket thing. These national teams, more kind of often than not, they try to pack the paint a lot with kind of these big bruising centers. Particularly Russia is very good at this, and they just hack guys. So like that explains a little bit of that. Is that's kind of just a Euro basket thing in general. It's really hard to finish at the rim in this setting, just because those teams are packing the paint. But I think that you're right. One of the things that I've noticed kind of through the entire development since Osman was drafted by the Cavs, he's extremely coachable. He has always been a guy that works his tail off and works to improve the things that are clear weaknesses. I mean, you can see that most glaringly in his three-point shooting. I mean, he was a terrible shooter before he was drafted. Like in that 14-15 season, he was not good. It's shooting the basketball from outside. And now, I mean, that's one of the areas that he's expected to fill as a Cavalier. And he's still a little bit inconsistent in it. But, you know, his form is much better. He's worked on it. He's worked on picking spots that are going to be more high percentage opportunities for him. And it's just a perfect encapsulation of that. He's got kind of the try-hard, as we like to say. He's got that gene. But more than that, I think he's just extremely coachable, and that's going to be big on this Cavs team. I think that he and Phil Handy are going to get along great. I think that, you know, that's how he's going to earn minutes, is he's going to do the things in practice that Tyronn Lue, a descendant of the Doc Rivers coaching tree, and that tree kind of all does this. You got to earn your stuff in practice, and he's going to be a guy that's going to be able to do that. I think that's where a lot of the improvements that we may see over the next couple of years, I bank a little bit more on those being made, just because he's a guy that you know is going to work to improve on those things.
Yeah, 100% agree with that. I think you're seeing the foundation of that. One of the other things that I think is worth noting of his play in this tournament is you really did see him on defense play in a way that was active. And I think that that's a continuation of what you're saying, that it's what's going to endear him to Lou and to Phil Handy. And Lou's really, like, if you think about this, the guy he's going to have to really kind of sell himself to, right? Like, he has to, because he's in a very interesting position where I almost think this worked out for him in a really good way. He got to go and play five games in Eurobasket, play against really good talent, you know, played against Spain, you know, and didn't have his best game against Spain. You know, I think that was the game where you saw some of, I think he looked tired. I don't know if you would agree with that or not, but I think he was tired by the time they got to that Spain game. He really struggled with Juancho in that game. You know, I think in particular, and Juancho was just great that whole tournament for Spain. Juancho Hernangómez played for the Nuggets. Said he struggled with him in that tournament, in that game a little bit. Struggled with the size. You saw, I don't know if you saw, like, Marc Gasol, like, dap him up, though, which was kind of a cool moment. But I think he was tired. And I think, like, the thing for him now, and I think bodes well for him, is he did all of this stuff that I think he's not, like, obviously going to shoot 11 times a game for the Cavs. That would be crazy. That would just be bonkers if that were to happen. You know, like, a lot would have to kind of go wrong. But I think for him, the kind of tournament he had, he got the experience of playing in that situation and being the guy. Like, if you listen to the games, you watch the games, they were hyping him up. And, you know, it wasn't every game, but he was more important to this team than Semi Erdan, an NBA player. Korkman, who's on the Sixers, he was more important than him. He was more important than everyone on this team for really most of these games, which is sort of essential, and he gave them this edge. He got to do that. And now he got 2 weeks off before training camp starts, before the Cavs will have everything going on there. I think, like, this was the right kind of pitch for him as he go into the year. Like, I think overall there are things he could do better, and we'll get into that, but I think this was, like, a good sales pitch for Chetty to lead into his rookie year.
Yeah, I definitely think he did a good job of kind of showing, even though he wasn't in a directly projectable role, he did a good job at showing the skills that are projectable to what he's going to do in the NBA. One of the gripes that I had was that he took way too much time setting up a pick and roll before he actually got into it. But when is he ever going to handle the ball in a pick and roll?
Yeah, let's talk about that. He looks very uncomfortable with the ball in his hands. Like, let's just be honest about that. Like, he is not super comfortable with the ball in his hands. Yeah. And you can see it. And even when he's shooting, his form isn't consistent. You're seeing his elbow kind of go over the place a little bit. And he's not comfortable creating. He's never going to have to do that with the Cavs. This is where, like, I think time for him, where on nights LeBron is off, or nights where, like, they're on a long road trip and they might be maybe, like, trust Jeff Green at that point in the year. Three games in Canton where he can go just do that stuff would be good for him, I think. And I think you could find that balance for him in the NBA.
Yeah, and I think that the other thing that kind of goes along with that is, you know, he didn't have a very impressive passing tournament. I didn't really think that, you know, his playmaking ability was very good, but I've seen him in the role that's going to be closer to what he's going to do in the NBA. He's not a very good passer, like, out of the pick and roll, but he's a very good, like, makes the extra pass guy, meaning that, like, if he catches the ball as it's being swung around the perimeter, he's very good, and he's a little bit open, but he sees that the guy in the corner is way more open. He fires that pass really well. He makes nice little passes on cuts to find outlet guys, like what Tristan Thompson would be, kind of sitting across the paint. He does that stuff really well. So again, that's another area that, you know, he's disappointed in, but, like, I know that that's not something that he needs to do. So, you know, basically what we saw is that, you know, he's not a guy that's going to have a very high ceiling in the NBA, but we know where he's at kind of in terms of his floor, and his floor is very high.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true as well. Was there anything else? Like, besides, we talked about the playmaking a little bit, and I want to get into what he did defensively. But is there anything else that he did in this tournament that you thought was problematic? Like, there's stuff we did good. The off-ball shooting was particularly, I thought, a revelation, and just how hard he played and whatnot. But was there anything else that he kind of struggled with that you think will matter for him as a rookie, and really that he'll really maybe needs to develop whatever circumstance he ends up kind of being in with the Cavs?
Yeah, I think the kind of footwork and timing in the pick and roll is a little bit of an issue. He, you know, as we said, looks a little uncoordinated, and he doesn't really and roll. He kind of needs the big kind of blitzing out in front of him so he can get catch up. He doesn't get hung up on screens. He just doesn't really take the most efficient pass to get around them. So I think that's an area where he might get exposed a little bit, at least early in the season. He might have a lot of trouble with, you know, a team like the Suns, who's going to run their two guard in a lot of pick and roll, a team like the Bucks, where he's going to have to defend either Giannis or Chris Middleton, trying to create out of the pick and roll. He's going to struggle in those matchups, and that's going to be an area he needs to work on. But by no means is that something that he's like always going to be bad at.
Yeah, I would agree with that as well. Defensively, I thought it was very interesting how they used him, because like you said, I think it was sort of inevitable with Turkey's roster makeup that he was going to have to do some of this. But him getting Juancho Hernangómez, him getting Milan Makvan instead of Bogdanović, these are things that I think caused him to struggle a little bit. And I think the games you saw him do really well were games where he wasn't tied to someone who was going to beat him up a little bit in the post and be able to kind of beat down on his physicality. In some of the games, you know, particularly the Russia game, you know, I would say like where games got a little bit out of control is where he kind of thrived in that chaos and just kind of taking advantage of bad passes. He looked very comfortable too in those situations, pushing the break. You know, looked very good kind of leading little basic three-man weaves and kind of doing that sort of ability should maybe help him in some ways because, maybe it's not going to be perfect, but if he's comfortable kind of running the break and doing these basic things where at least he can set it up for a LeBron or someone, that's a good thing, even if it ends up being LeBron running the show, inevitably running the show. Defensively, was this what you expected out of him? Again, two steals for him, a little under one block a game, a couple very, very nice chase down blocks as well.
Yeah, that's one thing that we forgot to talk about last time, and I brought it up on Twitter basically during every game because he had one every game. This dude's transition defense is real good, and that's something the Cavs really need because transition defense is like 90% effort, and you know how that goes with the Cavs. So I think he's going to be pretty effective in that role. He chases back. He makes the right decisions in those spots. And obviously has the athleticism to kind of pop up and swipe away an easy layup, which he did several times. So that was enticing. The one thing I will say kind of to add to your point about him defending fours is in that Russia game, and to a smaller extent, kind of in the Latvia game, I really felt like he did a good job defending fours who had the ball in their hands. He struggled against Makvan, and he struggled a little bit against a couple other matchups that he had, particularly in the UK game. He had a little bit of trouble when he got switched onto a couple of their fours. But he did really well when he was defending Nikita Kurbanov and Andrei Vrncevic, guys who are going to have the ball in their hands. He could defend in a little bit more of like a one-on-one context. So that was exciting. That was a reason to believe, you know, maybe that's projectable. And he's going to do a little bit better in kind of those isolation looks. I feel like he was just pushed around a little bit. Rebounding was a little bit subpar, especially when he was in those matchups. But again, that's something that, you know, is kind of like, needs to be addressed more long term. I don't think it affects him really this year because he's not going to be asked to do that as much.
When you look at what he's going to have to do coming out of this tournament, I think this was one. I would just posit that I think this was a clearly better experience for him and a better showcase of him than Summer League. Even though I think like Summer League would be good for him next year, I think this was better for him this particular summer. This is a question I asked in the Fear the Sword 5-on-5 last week, which people can go and read. He's going to be in a position now where he's playing really in a very interesting role because depending on how Lou and the Cavs see him, he could theoretically fill in on a couple different spots. So the question I asked was if you're going to rank who the Cavs should play in the regular season in terms of who should be getting minutes on the wing between him, Jeff Green, and Richard Jefferson, I think that's where they're going to lump him. I think two, just because of JR, because they're going to have to play Crowder maybe there a little bit because of Amon Shumpert. I think it's less likely he's going to play there. So where do you think right now, if you're Ty Lue and you're Phil Handy and you're kind of deciding what Osman's sort of play should be, where would you have him just in that pecking order if it was up to you in a vacuum to make that decision?
I think that he's probably gonna kind of split minutes with like that third tier of guys. So I mean, there's gonna be the starters. I think Korver's gonna play a ton. I think Crowder's gonna play a ton. And then I think he's gonna kind of fit in with that like Shump, Jeff Green, Richard Jefferson tier. He'll get minutes at the three. I don't think he'll get as many as people expect, though. I honestly think a lot of where his minutes are gonna come, especially because of how we know these guys are in practice. I think, honestly, he's probably going to end up taking some of Shump's minutes. I think that's where it gets carved out. I think he plays a little bit of backup two. He's going to take some of those minutes where, you know, Shump would maybe be playing as the nominal one, and he's going to be the guy that's doing that with, like, JR, Crowder, LeBron and Love or something like that in like a bench unit. I think that he's probably going to play sparingly for the first part of the season. But I think as we go forward, I think that if he carves out minutes, it's probably going to be at the two rather than the three, just because there's kind of a log jam of minutes there, because you have to play Love at the four for a decent part of the time. You have to play LeBron at the four for probably more than he's played in the past couple of years. And you have to spend some time with Jay Crowder at both positions, too. You have to give Korver some 3 minutes because you're going to have lineups where you want him and JR together. So I think it's going to be a thing where he's probably playing more two guard than he is playing small forward.
I think there's a scenario there to kind of freak Cavs fans out a little bit where Shumpert moves to the one for minutes alongside Chetty. I'm very much of the opinion that he should be someone who should just get some of the minutes Jefferson might play in the playoffs just so he gets the reps. Like, that's kind of my take, is that, like, I really think, like, you just got to give him the minutes and do the Patrick McCaw thing. And then, you know, maybe have him play again sometimes. Like, I know, like, there's the price tag attached to him. There's the idea that they picked him and paying him out of that taxpayer mid-level ahead of Jamal Crawford. I think that's an understandable sentiment, but I think like him and Canton would make some sense. Like, I think him getting some reps with the Charge, whether that's the showcase game that's going to be at the queue later in the year, whether that's a stretch where he can practice with the team, whether that's when the Cavs are on the road and they just want to let him play, although maybe like road trips are the better place for him to play. It's a very interesting question for him and what he might do, and he'll have to do some of that at training camp. I think him and Zizic and Eddie Tavares and Kay Felder, more so than anything, because we're not going to get resolution on Isaiah Thomas's hip, right? We're not going to get that in training camp, I would imagine, at least not to the degree that I think would make people feel comfortable. I think the most intriguing thing in preseason for the Cavs is what happens with Chetty, is what happens with Zizic and Eddie Tavares and Kay Felder, because A, Chetty is going to be competing for minutes. Zizic might be in that minutes eating realm for behind Tristan Thompson, and Tavares and Felder might be fighting for a roster spot. Now, I think Chetty is the most secure. I think he has the best chance of maybe playing minutes on this team this year, depending on how things break out. Although Zizic, just by sheer numbers and positioning, maybe gets ahead of him. But I think he's in training camp for him, coming to the United States for the first six. I don't even know if he's been to the U.S. before, but this would be he's been there to sign his contract. But this would be the first extended time he's lived in the U.S. That acclimation for him, getting that time between Eurobasket and camp, I think is going to be. He's got a lot. I think training camp is where he's going to have to make an immediate impact and kind of get his name out there. And I think how he looks in preseason will go a long way for Lue trusting him early in the year.
Yeah, I think that he's going to, you know, he'll get some early minutes just because he'll kind of get thrown into the fire and he'll be like, well, let's see what you can do, particularly if, you know, somebody comes out and either Isaiah is out for an extended period of time or somebody just comes out and lays an egg among the guard rotation, which, given that two of the Cavs guards are Derrick Rose and Iman Shumpert, not unreasonable to expect that may be something that happens. I think that's the situation where he might break in. I agree with you that I think Dizich probably has the inside track on, or the best inside track on getting minutes, just because in an ideal world, Tristan Thompson's going to have the shortest leash on the team. Whenever the team gets up, he should be the first one that is coming off the floor.
In the non-LeBron category.
Right. I'm saying like when the backups go in, like Zizic should get all of those minutes.
Yes.
And I think that even more than Seti should, I think that Zizic is going to be playing a lot in whatever blowouts the Cavs have, one way or the other. So I think that you're right that training camp is going to be important for both of these guys to kind of stake their claim. I wouldn't be surprised if you see them, you know, playing 15 minutes a game. I wouldn't be surprised to see them in camp for the first month and a half. Any outcome really wouldn't surprise me, just because there's so many moving parts and there's so many new pieces on this Cavs team that, you know, it's a big question of who's going to look ready, who's not going to look ready, who's going to need more time to adjust. And that comes from both the rookies and the new additions.
Yeah, I think that's dead on. Overall, I would say I'm very impressed with Jody. I think we've run through everything he's done. Is there anything else on his actual play that you think is worth getting into, Trevor?
No, I think we said everything that we need to. I think that his film is a good encapsulation of his skill set at this point. And I don't really see anything else that really popped out to me.
Worth noting, I will just look out, if you're looking at his stats from playing with in EuroLeague last year with Efes, his team in Turkey, shot 47.7% on twos, so that's better than what he did in the tournament, had a pretty decent effective field goal percentage, shot a little bit better on threes in the tournament, so perhaps there's an uptick there, and I think he does look very comfortable off ball, which is big for him. Trevor, we'll wrap it up on this last uber important question here. The Cavs seem to have gone with the last Chetty, a Last Jedi pun for their Chetty hashtag. It seems what they're going to be using this year for him. Is that a good or bad pick for him?
It's perfect for him. He is actually like a massive Star Wars fan.
Oh my God, this is incredible.
There's a video on YouTube that you can go find from a dunk contest in Turkey last year, where he and Furkan Korkmaz, who's also a big Star Wars guy, went out dressed in full, like, lightsaber, Darth Vader mask, stormtrooper mask, capes, and did their dunk in that, and it's phenomenal. So he's that's one of the things about his chemistry fit, is he's going to fit along with Kevin Love and Richard Jefferson and Channing Frye just fine. And I think that's the perfect thing. That he's already got like this really nice punnable name that also happens to be like something he's really interested in. So that'll help with like the fan connection a little bit and help to make that a little easier for him.
So three things, we'll wrap it up here. That video, everyone, will be in the show notes. I will put a link to the YouTube video. I literally have Googled this as we record, and it's, I'm already just blown away by this. Two, how is his English?
It's fine. He had a couple English interviews. If you're paying attention to Eurobasket, you should follow my buddy Emmett Ryan. Ball in Europe is his Twitter handle. He had an interview with Seti after I think the Serbia game, and he had a pretty good English for that interview, and I've seen him in other stuff too. His English is way better than Zizic's is at this point, so I don't think he's going to have that big of a problem. That's a big question I have with Zizic, is how much is that going to impact him early on, because he does not speak very good English at this point.
Yeah, if anyone saw him at that press conference, that was very telling. Trevor, thanks so much for coming on the Locked On Cavs podcast to break more down of Chetty. And what it, for the person who has covered him the most out of any Cavs media person, blogger, anything. The person who's actually paid the most attention to him. Does it feel like it's all paying off now that he's actually going to be in the NBA this year?
You know, I'm excited to see him. We'll see kind of how good he is. You know, that's the big question with these European guys. I mean, to me, in Europe, they may look like they're ready, and then for any number of reasons, that may not end up being the case. I mean, look at the guy I hyped a ton last year, Malcolm Delaney for the Hawks. I thought he was like totally ready to come make an impact. And he was mostly, you know, up and down last season. So I think that, you know, the payoff will come when he's actually successful in the NBA. I'm just happy that, you know, people are actually buying into him. People are excited about him. It's not just, oh, who's this mystery man who we've never seen before. People are actually trying to, you know, pay attention, and they're actually trying to learn about him, which is nice to see. It's an improvement over kind of how things have been in the past. So that's what I'm more excited about, that people are invested in him and Zizic and want to see both do well and want to actively learn about the two new players.
Yeah, I think if Cavs fans love anything, it is young talent, and I think I really do think hype for Osman is very high. I think it's one of the things Cavs fans are really, the diehard Cavs fans at least, are very much looking forward to him, and I think he's going to be a very interesting thing to watch this year, because I think he is the first real, actual, him and Zizic both, but I think Osman more so, are the first real talents they've had in this LeBron era that are maybe worth the investment of time. No offense to Kay Felder or Tavares, but I think these guys are better prospects, and I think we're going to see how the Cavs approach this for the first time in the second LeBron era, and what could be a walk year for him, which we talked about last time we talked. But Trevor, thanks so much, and as always, we'll have you back on again soon to talk about Chetty.
All right, sounds good.
When he chases down like Embiid or something like that, we'll have you back on when he breaks the internet. And if you aren't already following Trevor on Twitter, give him a follow at Illegal Screens. And all year he'll be writing at the Step Back. Trevor, are you doing your league coverage again at the Step Back? I should actually ask you that instead of just assuming.
Yes, I am. I just rolled out my top 50 EuroLeague players. I will probably be writing, you know, my goal is to hit probably 100,000 words on Luka Doncic by the time the draft comes through. So with that Brooklyn pick, pay attention for Luka Doncic takes over there, because the Cavs actually have a real shot at getting him, and he's real good.
Would he be your number one draft person next, like on top of your draft board?
He's not, but just because I think Michael Porter Jr. is built like a cyborg, and I think that he's probably a little bit better. I have more questions about Doncic than I do about Porter, but Doncic is firm number two.
So for you, it would go Porter, Doncic. Would it go Bagley then, or do you go one of the two bigs?
No, I go Ayton, Bagley four, and then Colin Sexton 5, because Colin Sexton is basically like Dion reincarnate.
Oh my God, I'm in. I'm already in. Sexton Island, I'm in. We're in. This is going to happen. But this has been Locked On Cavs. Follow all of Trevor's work. You will get NBA draft. You will get EuroLeague. You'll get everything literally that he's going to cover on the Step Back, and you'll see his writing from time to time. And for the sword, Trevor, thanks again. And this has been Locked On Cavaliers. Tomorrow, you're going to have someone that I'm sure Cavs fans out there have their experiences with and their opinions on, but it's Andy Liu of Warriors World and the Light Years podcast. Andy and I had a very good conversation that I've already recorded about the Warriors and the Cavs this upcoming year. He didn't even stay lame-o Steph better the whole show, until maybe like a half version of it at the end, but I really think you'll enjoy Andy. Aside from his Twitter presence, he gives a lot of really nuanced takes on both teams there. So you guys enjoy that, but here's for myself and Trevor. This has been Locked On Cavs. Have a good one, guys.